Hey, Wonderfuls. Welcome to episode 323 of the podcast, part two of my interview and conversation with Teresa Edmonds. By the way, I totally blanked and said Teresa in my last intro. So this is one of those times when I'm glad there's a part two, because now I can correct myself. It's Teresa Edmonds. Apologies, Teresa. I hope you enjoy it. I, of course, am looking at the wonderful PodX looming ahead here in the next couple of weeks in Nashville. You can visit podx.com/JV Club for discounted tickets, and you can check out their main website that's got the wonderful schedule and all the good bits and pieces of things you can expect to see if you go. I'm really looking forward to it. I want to encourage people to share and enjoy Fortune Rookie as I continue to push it out into the Emmys universe. And I think that's it for now. Enjoy the episode, and I will speak to you soon. For those of us who are not participating in this conversation, so I should say us, because I am 100% definitively participating in this conversation, you and I are picking this up a week or two after we had to end our last conversation, as it was turning into a 12-hour conversation about Mormonism, which really probably will continue on and on and on. But I'm going to refocus us, just because I want to make sure I get a better picture before we do the MASH game, a better picture of kind of you, and not to intrude too much on a part of your life that obviously was incredibly complicated and
girl, I'm an open
not
book.
Necessarily great.
Intrude but, away.
I want to get a better, maybe a more complete picture of what your day to day was like in those years. Certainly, you know, in a time when you were going to this, and I'm using air quotes, but that's not fair, right. But this high school.
No, that's fair. That's
okay.
Fair.
Okay. And sort of couch surfing slash at some point you sort of just were living in your car. Is that yeah. an accurate
yep.
way of saying it? So what, this is like getting really into the minutiae, but I think for people who didn't have that experience at such a young age, I want to make sure to ask questions that I think probably were roused with curiosity about, you know, what does that look like for you? Where do you shower? You know, what is a day? Mm-hmm. Like, it's a Wednesday. It's time for Teresa to go to school. What does that look like, if you don't mind?
Yeah. No. You can ask any question. I'm wide open.
Right.
During the years where I was homeless, you know, it would really depend on whatever happened Tuesday night. So on Wednesday morning, I would wake up wherever I went to bed on Tuesday night, rarely the same place twice, try to usually get out of there quickly. Because if it's, you know, not a place where you're supposed to be laying your head, you need to get on the road. I'd like keep orange juice in my glove box because it wouldn't go bad as fast as milk. Unrefrigerated. So I'd have an orange juice and a bagel or something, you know, something I took from work the night before, like leftover, you know, cheesy bread from Red Robin or something. And then I'd get to class. And I'd spend all my time during the day. I'd spend all of my time on campus, and it was just a community college campus. So,
and that, but that's to get that's high school, or that's the
well, that's those years.
Yeah. Yeah,
so,
yeah.
Oh, okay. So when I during the
pre
one year
getting
that I attended.
Your, yeah, yeah,
yeah. The one year that I attended the, you know, the not a high school.
Right.
That I was still living at home then. So I, my sister and I would get in the car and we'd drive there, and it was only 3 hours a day. Four hours a day for 3 days a week. So we'd just do that. And then we'd come home, and then it was, as long as I was living at home, it was just really miserable. You know, we had a split level house, and my parents kind of had the upstairs, and we hung out in the downstairs and just tried to lay low and avoid any trouble. And so I spent those years I just spent in my basement like mainlining Comedy Central, mainlining Comedy Planet before it was Comedy Central, mainlining Ha, but back before
Comedy Central. Oh my gosh. I'm trying to remember if I even remember a thing before Comedy Central, and I don't know if I. Comedy Planet sounds familiar. Ha sounds.
Ha.
Hilarious. That's.
They showed like I Love Lucy reruns, and then Comedy Planet and Ha came together to birth Comedy Central.
Understood.
And then I watched all the, you know, Kids in the Hall, Mystery Science Theater 3000, the exit. What's that one? The Amy Sedaris Exit 57.
And Strangers with Strangers with Candy. I think
exactly.
I just said Strangers with Candy, which was a totally other show that most people didn't watch.
Yeah. And then once I left home, then I didn't have access to TV. So I didn't get to watch those things for a long time still. But those were super formative experiences and made me a comedy nerd from the jump.
Yeah.
But also because I was raised very blue collar and Mormon, it was just a world that I admired from afar. Never once did it cross my mind that it was something I could ever pursue for myself.
Yeah.
Never.
Yeah. Did it feel subversive? Did those things feel?
Yes.
Yeah.
Oh, it was so naughty. My mom, who was like the worst Mormon, but just a controlling narcissist, really. Mm-hmm. She'd come down, and I remember one time specifically, it was a Kids in the Hall sketch where it was just the point of the sketch was that it was absurdist and out of context.
Yeah.
And one of the characters is wearing a big ballet tutu and slapping one of the other characters across the face. Mm-hmm. And she sees this and she turns off the television, like so offended, when the whole point of the sketch is to be like as bizarre as possible. And she's like, Teresa, I'm very concerned with the type of media you're choosing. I just don't think that it's what our Heavenly Father would approve of. Now, meanwhile, she is renting every rated R movie that has ever been made and then making an illegal download of it on her TV VCR. And when I start, like towards the end, but just before I left home, she just started giving me pills. Like, she's a total pill head. Like, I'd be depressed. And she's like, here, take this. And, so, like, for her to be coming and putting on, like, the cloak of righteousness to correct me about... It was all I could do not to laugh in her face.
Yeah. But
I have respect for my own safety, so I did not laugh in her face.
Smart.
And it I was just the waited until she was asleep and then watched Kids in the Hall again.
And that's... It was the respect for your own safety that caused you to go, I'm out of here as well. I can't do this. So
I saw a chance, so I bolted.
So the high school, non-high school was 1 year. Yeah. And then after that... So that was
16.
16.
And then so 17 and 18, I spent home. Those were my homeless times when I was going to the community college.
Right.
And so, 17 and 18, that's when I would be spending my whole day, like, sleeping in the library on a couch. And, you know, wherever you see homeless people, that's where I would be. Yeah. Like, sitting on a chair at Borders, eating in a Denny's or something like that. But the nice thing about hygiene is that if you're Mormon, you can use the bathrooms at church. So nice. I wash up, you know, just do what my mom used to call a whore's bath, because you only wash, you know, the parts that people pay for. Yeah. So I do one of those. I do one of those in like truck stop bathrooms or something. And I loved it at the time because I'd just be like there in my sports bra. But, you know, the moms would look like terrified and I'd be like, damn straight. I'm like Madonna and suddenly Seeking Susan. You can't handle me. You know, just loved that. As I really romanticized those years as I was experiencing them, probably as a coping mechanism.
Okay, we're going to take a break. I will be back after a word from our wonderful buddies at Maximum Fun.
Unless you're able to discuss the semiotics of direwolves in Game of Thrones, Inside Pop is definitely not for you.
Sean, that's a little extreme and also not quite true.
Okay, Amita, how about Inside Pop is the podcast for people who love and appreciate the best pop culture has to offer?
much better.
In every episode, we interview the people who create the culture you crave.
Past interviews include Luke Cage showrunner Cheo Hadari Coker, the music supervisor of The Florida Project, and Mudbound director Dee Rees.
You'll also get the very best pop culture recommendations in our Big Sell segment.
Plus, the opinions of two TV producers who are pop culture obsessives and actually do care a lot about direwolves.
Which, of course, symbolize our inability to truly connect with the natural world without ultimately destroying it and in the process destroying ourselves.
Listen to Inside Pop every other Wednesday on the Maximum Fun Podcast Network.
Speaking of safety, obviously you exchanged one, you know, potentially, ostensibly, whatever, right. You exchanged one form of being, you know, threatened, emotionally being mm-hmm. threatened, you know,
physically,
spiritually,
yeah.
physically, mm-hmm. To, you know, I'll take my chances with,
yeah.
with the devil I don't know,
exactly.
so to speak.
Exactly.
Did you have a sense of that? Because when I was a teenager, you know, we've talked about this, but I didn't. Like, I understood that sort of in theory, but I also very, very much had the sensibility of many, many young people, which was, you know, it's not going to happen to me. I'm not going to be
right.
a person that this happens to. It just was more, you know, it was like, I didn't realize how abstract I was thinking of it until I got older. And then I really was like, oh, wait, this really could be me. Why am I?
Right.
Why am I acting like it's beyond the scope of, you know, why couldn't I be the person that makes a stupid decision and ends up dead?
Yeah.
Did you feel like, or and also, frankly, did you feel protected? Did you feel like you'd made the right decision? And did your connection with your religion and your spirituality kind of help take you through those times?
I think, like most things in life, the answer is both.
Yeah.
You know, like, yeah. I think part of this is what I often jokingly refer to as abused child privilege. When you've already been through all the things that you're terrified might happen to you, then the devil you
That's
don't
right.
know suddenly looks a whole lot more appealing.
Yeah. I think we talked about that on our last
yeah.
call. Yeah, for
so
sure.
I had that, what, like, well, you know, bad things are happening to me here. I might as well just see if some good things happen elsewhere. And that's not to say that I didn't live with fear, because I lived with horrifying, chronic, daily fear of sexual assault specifically. Mm. It affected a lot of how I interacted with people, the choices that I made. I was hyper vigilant against sexual assault. Like, there would be times I'd go home with like a friend from work. And it wasn't just me. There'd be a bunch of people around. And on this one particular case, a guy from work offered me his bed. And that was all it took for me to go, you know, five alarm fire, no way. And judging this guy, I mean, I don't know. It probably wasn't as big a threat as I feel. But also in hindsight, 2019, we know the guy offers you his bed and you don't want to have sex with him. The answer should probably always be no. But back then, I didn't know that. Yeah. And so I just went, thanks, no thanks. And I decided to be like Maxi, you know, manic pixie dream girl and be like, no, I want to sleep out under the stars. And I made it like this like whimsical part of my personality when really it was like, no, my body is telling me that if I get in that bed, I'm not going to be in control of what happens. So I'm not going to do that.
Right.
But I'm going to find a way to get out of this situation artfully so that nobody has to know about the terror that's screaming in my head. You know?
Yeah, I totally get that. Within all of that, was there even room for you being sort of genuinely interested in someone and
no,
want yeah
not at all
yeah.
not at all. I've got a million stories of guys hitting on me and me not getting at all that that's what was happening. Because like there's one guy that I had a total crush on. I thought he was so hot, and he comes up to me on campus and references like this project we were doing, and I just told him like, well, hey, you know, you could go talk to the professor, I bet she'll let you see it, when he's like trying to come up with an excuse to spend time with me. And I'm just like, oh, I already turned it in, go talk to the professor, bye. You know, like, did not get it.
Yeah.
Did not get it at all.
Yeah.
at all. Yeah, a million stories like that, because I had completely shut that part of myself down. In fact, I even had a rule for myself that I was not going to kiss anybody until I met the man I was going to marry. Mm. And when I set that rule at probably around 14, and it was after one of these, you know, For Mormons, we call it EFY, but every religion has some version of this too, where it's like a youth gathering and like some kind of cool, hip youth pastor will come in and talk to you, you know?
Yeah.
And my version of that, I'm listening to this and it's another chastity lecture because that's all they talked to us about in the 80s and 90s is don't have sex, don't show people your body.
Yeah.
And I'm listening to this and I felt like I should really set this rule for myself. Like the rules of the church weren't strict enough for me. I needed to set an additional rule of never kissing anybody. And my friends at the time were like, whatever. But I hadn't kissed anybody up to that point. And I had not consented to kiss anybody up to that point. And it really didn't seem like very out of character for me. But now what I realize my friends were reacting to is the hyper-sexualization that I had evinced unknowingly as a child who had been sexually abused. So they're like, whatever, you're like a fast girl. Meanwhile, I've never kissed a boy. But what they're responding to that makes them think I'm so fast and worldly is childhood sexual abuse. But none of us knew that then, you know.
Right.
But so I didn't my first kiss, my first, you know, real kiss was with the man I'm still married to, Jared, at 20. So I told myself that I was doing it for God. Now looking back, I am glad that I had that rule, but I wish that it wasn't framed around keeping chaste. I wish it was about like getting to know my own identity, my own sexuality before embarking on a partnership in that space, you know, like learning what it felt like to me to actually have my own desire, to know what consent felt like, to know what I wanted instead of everything up until my life, whether it was the over-sexualization of abuse or the different kind of over-sexualization that comes with chastity and modesty culture, my whole point of existence for what I was raised to believe was for what a man would want to do to me.
Yeah.
And so just turning that off entirely was the only way that I could find under the framework that I was existing in to kind of keep myself, you know, from all of the bad cliches. There's a whole lot of strippers and sex workers in my family, and I celebrate them now. Mm. Now that I know better, I celebrate those women. But back then, I thought it was the worst fate that could befall me. And I'm just like, well, I'm not going to be like, you know. And I couldn't have even articulated it in those terms back then. I just knew I didn't want to be a bad girl. But what my definition of bad girl was is like the cliches of like the stripper with the daddy issues, you know?
Yeah.
And that is a bad cliche. but I just didn't want it to be me. So, yeah, I dated a little. I had boyfriends that I just didn't kiss because Mormon.
Yeah.
And
were they Mormon?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so since my rule was so anchored within Mormonism, then it became like, oh my gosh, my boyfriend's mothers loved me so much. I never had to worry about me coming home pregnant someday or keeping them home from their mission or whatever. I was just kind of, I was really kind of pedestalized. I wish that as a culture we had understood abuse better so that somebody could have spotted it as, you know, a sign. But that's just not where I was. And so, it was just like Teresa's this spiritual giant just like held up on this pedestal and nobody was like intervening or getting help or, you know. Right. There were a couple of people along the way who did kind of gently pull me aside and say, like, I just want you to know that you are loved. Like, gave me some kind of a message like that. I just want you to know that God loves you. Mm-hmm. Because while they might not have been able to know the right thing to do or even completely what was going on, they recognized suffering and they reached out to my suffering. So to those people, I'm very grateful. And I still wish that there had been more, you know, training, more professionalism, something so anybody knew what they were looking at with me.
And I don't think that we actually ever explicitly addressed, if you can, who and when this happened to you.
Do you mean the abuse?
Yeah.
Well, you know, I because of my position as a public advocate, I don't typically, and this is, please consider this completely publishable, you know, I don't tend to get into too much of the specifics because I find that people use it as kind of, they play oppression Olympics, because when somebody's been abused, they've been gaslit. Right. Like they go right. hand in hand.
Right.
So the abuse survivor is told explicitly and implicitly that what is happening to you is normal and fine.
Right.
So if they hear somebody with experiences that they judge to be more harmful than them, then they can say, well, it's not that bad. So I right. guess I'm fine.
Right.
And then if they judge those experiences to be less harmful than what they've gone through, then it's like, well, fuck her. She doesn't know what she's talking about.
Right.
You know?
Right. Right.
But I can definitely
that.
Say,
I understand that.
But this is what I do say publicly, through both neighbors and family members. I have experienced sexual abuse, physical abuse, emotional abuse, and spiritual abuse.
Yeah. Okay.
And yeah.
Yeah, we covered. I mean, obviously, we did talk about that, but I wasn't sure if it was a situation where
yeah.
you felt the opposite and you felt like, you know, it's important to identify
totally.
The types of people or the person that, you know, you least expect and all that kind of stuff, too, which is, you know,
it's that is very true.
Yeah.
That is very true, because, you know, my family members were yeah. my abusers. There were neighbors as well, but family members are the bulk of my abusers. So I completely agree with that. It is not who you think it is. The way that abuse actually occurs is not at all the way that culturally we understand it to occur.
Yeah.
Just yesterday, I was having a discussion with somebody, and he was trying to ask me, like, well, how does sexual trafficking work? I mean, that just seems so bizarre that there's people out there that would do this. And I had to just say to him, when people tell me their stories, I keep confidence. I believe yeah. very, very strongly about that. But I also believe in combating ignorance where I find it.
Right.
So I just looked at him, because I know him well and I know his family, and I just said, there are three members of your family that have been sexually trafficked. And he looked at me like, whoa, 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 whoa. You know,
yeah.
like he could not believe it. And I was like, I can't tell you more, because I keep confidence. But there are three members of your family that have known sexual trafficking, because it's not taken. That's not how it works, you know. It's bikini barista places, and it's girls who get hit on at baseball games, and it's friends you make online that tell you that they understand you better than your parents ever will, and it's through these nobody ever gets I shouldn't say ever, because obviously there's still criminal enterprise in this world,
right?
But very rarely do people just get snatched, you know.
Right.
Trafficking most often occurs within families. Within families, where a parent will, you know, and they won't think of it in these terms, because in our imagination, sexual trafficking is putting a woman in a shipping container and shipping her around the world.
Sure.
But really, there's labor trafficking, there's sexual trafficking, there's a whole host of other things where a person is used honestly, like a beast of burden, whether that's they're not getting their pay for cleaning hotel rooms, whether that's their passport is being kept behind, whether that's, you know, they're not allowed to leave. Sometimes their actual physical freedom is inhibited. And often there are situations where parents will pimp out their children.
Right.
This is what human trafficking looks like within the Mormon community, is parents who are either survivors themselves and just believe that this is normal and how the world works, or parents who are upwardly striving, both like socially and with money, they will just send their daughters to be raped, to be abused. It happens all the time. Like, you know, the Jeffrey Epstein, the billionaire from Florida, who all the politicians were at his parties, and and he is like a verifiable, like you never get proof. Like there is proof on Jeffrey Epstein for, you know, prolonged abuse and trafficking. And he got a slap on the wrist because he's got powerful friends, because that's how these things work. And right. so it anyway, whole other podcast to have about that.
Well, I'm glad that comedy was something that was like working for you and sort of keeping you mm-hmm. going on any kind of level. Did you have, I mean, I know that you said that you had shut that part off of yourself.
Yeah.
On an intellectual level, did you have an idea of what this perfect man that you would kiss, you know, would be like? And obviously real life is different, and but you did end up finding your husband mm-hmm. But many years later, did you have a sort of like image in mind that kind of supplanted like the yeah. reality of the people around you and what your life looked like, and not having room for that there?
Yeah. Yeah, I've always been a precocious reader since very, very little. Like, bizarrely little. I've been a very precocious reader. So being able to have, and specifically fiction, so escaping into these other worlds, you know, I've done so much thinking over the years about just like the survivor's guilt, you know, yeah. Like why am I living this life? And there's so many others out there who aren't. And there's, just overlapping layers of reasons and privilege and opportunity. Just, you know, it's a minefield. But one that I do feel very strongly about is reading. The fact that I had all of these different lives that could live inside my head that I could experiment with. Maybe it just doesn't have to be this way. Maybe I could have a life that's not like the one that I've been given, but something that I can create for myself. That all came from books, all of it. One of my most favorites, like many women of my generation, was Anne of Green Gables.
Yeah.
And my middle name is Anne with an E. So I just felt like that book was mine.
Understood.
That book was mine. And so much of one of the things that's really brilliant about that book is how much of the darkness is subtext. Mm. And so I, as a child, read that and it was just really resonating with me, and I was feeling so much kinship with Anne, but I never could have articulated like, oh yeah, it's because she had gone from orphanage to labor house to orphanage to labor house, and she knows the same things that I know. No. I never, ever, ever could have done the math on that. Mm. I just liked her. She was scrappy and smart, and she still had hope. That was what I liked about Anne. And now as an adult, I can go back. Like, actually, when I watched the recent Netflix series, mm-hmm. I had to take breaks and like just cry it out sometimes, mm-hmm. because the series makes a lot of that subtext more of the plot, mm-hmm. and or more of the, you know, anyway, the it's more present. And so all of a sudden I could not hide from the things that I was hiding from as a child. It was right in my face, yeah. Which I think is good. I think it's good.
But yeah.
Yeah.
I haven't been able to watch it. I started watching it, and I was so obsessed with the books and then so obsessed with the Megan Follows version that I couldn't and then of course there's two of the kids in the hall in that as well, which is hilarious. So everything comes full circle. But
truth.
Yeah, I just couldn't. It was I typically feel like I have room for different iterations of stuff. I mean, I certainly watch all of the variations on like any Jane Austen that's ever made.
Yes.
You know, I'm happy to see. I'm as much as I, you know, love the version of Pride and Prejudice that Colin Firth is in, like many people, I'm like so open to other interpretations of that book, all that. So I feel like I create those opportunities to be open to them. I was like, this is clearly well done. People have been telling me to watch it because I'm so vocal about, you know, that shared love of Anne, and people are enjoying it. And I'm so locked in to Richard Farnsworth and Colleen Dewhurst and Megan Fall. Like, I am so locked in. I couldn't do it. It just felt weird to me. It was almost like this is so dumb because I'm not claiming that I feel stronger about it than anybody else, like in general as a book or whatever, but it was almost like watching members of your family be portrayed by someone else. Like, oh, look, they tried to cast my cousin Anne. Like, oh, look, this is their interpretation of what my Aunt Marilla was like. I mean, this is weird because obviously that's not Marilla. I know what Marilla looks like, who, by the way, doesn't match the description from the book anyway. Colleen Dewhurst doesn't match that description. So how I'm holding those two ideas in my head at the same time, deciding that that's legit, is, you know, remains to be seen. But I couldn't do it. I just couldn't do it. So, but I, you know, maybe that will change.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, this is still kind of like the spiritualism in me talking, but I do find that certain media find us when we need it. Like I have found a lot of what I would still call revelation through reading the right book at the right time and watching the right show at the right time and just feeling that message really land. So, you know?
Yeah, absolutely.
Anne is just waiting for your future.
Oh, it's time for a quick break. I will be back after a word from our friends at Maximum Fun.
Hi. Hi, I'm Biz.
And I'm Teresa.
And we host When Bad Mother, a comedy podcast about parenting.
Whether you are a parent or just know kids exist in the world, join us each week as we honestly share what it's like to be a parent. I don't know how to fix mornings for myself. I do not know how to make mornings okay for myself.
So the t-shirt, I don't do mornings, yes, isn't even a funny shirt. I shouldn't get it for you.
It's sad.
It's a sad shirt.
Yeah, it's a sad shirt with tears flowing.
So join us each week as we judge less, laugh more, and remind you that you are doing a great job.
Find us on MaximumFun.org, on Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, let's use that as a segue into our MASH game here, since since we know for sure that we can start with let's go with worlds in books three that you can jump into and just be in and experience and live inside whenever you want.
Okay, well, the first one that came to mind is a book called I Capture the Castle. It's this might sound bizarre because it's like in many ways very mundane, but in other ways, I don't know. I guess I've just always been a romantic at heart because they are poor and impoverished and live in a castle in England as their artist father, their novelist father, is trying to like find the muse again. And it's this beautiful coming of age story. And it's, I don't know, I guess I really like worlds where the bummer stuff is just accepted as a part of it.
Mm-hmm. You know? Yeah, I get that.
Yeah. So they all, like the daughters in that story, they scrap together to find out how they're gonna, you know, get a pretty dress for one to wear and entice the boy when they have no money for food and all, you know, I like that. Yeah, like very Boxcar Children kind of thing.
Sure. Well, that's that kind of pioneer spirit, too, that you want to, you know, that you feel like, how do I hold on to that without all of the garbage that, or with all the garbage, but how do you, you know, make peace with that, that goes along with, you know, heading into the West? Because I also identify with a sort of frontier attitude and I very neatly skirt past, like, I mean, listen, I wouldn't kill any Indians. I'm pretty sure I would be the only pioneer who like thought that, you know, everyone should live in peace and harmony together. Okay, I Capture the Castle as your first book. Give me two more.
Let me think. I'd say My Father's Dragon, which is a kid's book that I really loved, about a little boy who stows away on a ship. And I'm just realizing there's, boy, talk about this pioneer trend in me.
Yeah.
He goes and has an adventure and rescues a dragon and befriends a cat. And it's, yeah, it's just this whole adventure story. And he, this is funny. This just occurred to me. The dragon that he has to rescue is enslaved. And he's kept as a ferry between these two islands. And the boy rescues the dragon so that he doesn't have to be enslaved anymore. Boy, thanks, brain. My brain's on a real bender here. Well, find a new rut, brain.
Yeah. okay, so for your third one, listen, I will admit that I was expecting you to maybe say Anne of Green Gables, but...
Yes, yeah, it should be Anne of Green Gables. I was sitting here racking my brain for something, because, you know, I love comedy. I like fashion. I'm like, what's a book that's just fun? Nothing is coming to those.
We can make up our categories to scratch those itches as well.
Okay, good.
For sure. Yeah, let's do it. Let's do three. I'll give you my personal favorite fashion question, which is three styles of clothing, male, female, androgynous. It just doesn't matter, from any era. Let's in this alternate universe, every single one has an equanimity of comfort. So even if a corset is the most uncomfortable thing, it's like everything feels like yoga pants. So no matter what it looks like. So three styles that you would love to try out. And it doesn't matter how crazy they might seem in our world, in this alternate universe. It's like you can, there's no rules.
Boy, I love this. Okay. My current design inspiration is like Mary Tyler Moore meets Dolly Parton.
Great.
So that's like one. like sparkly retro. Maybe that's
okay. Yeah, that makes sense. I love it.
I love like mod clothes. Like, oh, anything that Joan wore on Mad Men.
Yeah, great.
That's a big, yeah, inspiration for me. And then I'd say like sparkly jumpsuits, great. Like ABBA.
Great, 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 great. Did you ever watch, sometimes my, it feels like I would, this is, it feels, I only associate seeing this with being at someone else's house, whether it's like my grandparents or like some, you know, some party that my parents took me to, where the kids were just like stuck in a corner to watch TV. but did you ever see the Mandrell sisters?
Oh my gosh, girl, you just pulled something.
Because, so, you know, because it's like that, it's the thing where,
yes.
The thing where the three sisters each have variations on the same outfit. I feel like I would just really, really go deep in my imagination of like which outfit did I like the best, or if I were a fourth Mandrell sister, like what components of their chiffon green outfit of varying lengths and sleeve styles would I want, you know, if I had to adapt that look.
You have just completely blown my mind. I have not talked to anybody who remembered the Mandrell sisters, but I have two sisters who bookend me. So there were three of us at that age range, and we were living in Texas during the years that the Barbara Mandrell show was on. So if you don't think that we were with our noses glued to the TV and fighting over who got to be Barbara and who got to be like Lurleen or whatever it was, you know? Oh my gosh. Yes. Formative experience.
Yeah, those formative. Okay. Let's do three comedy folks. It can be characters or stand-ups or, you know, real people or characters they played from comedy that from any era that you would want as a real life buddy to hang out with and make you laugh.
Maria Bamford, Gilda Radner, Laura Keitlinger.
Gilda, got it. Except I did those in reverse order. I don't want that to ruin how something breaks down.
How will the fates know which one is true?
Okay, well, I think we're just going to... That's what my hand did, and so that was, like, unconscious, so there must be a reason for it. Okay.
There you go.
Next category, three foods that in this life are you're either allergic to or they don't ecologically feel... You know, that, you know, conscientiously you don't want to eat them, or you know they're too high in calories or whatever the reason. In this alternate universe, not only can you have them in perpetuity with zero negative ramifications, but you can also have them at the snap of a finger. So if it's something that's hard to get or you know rare in some way, that also is not an issue. Three.
What first came to mind is the food that I don't eat anymore because it's bad for me, but that I grew up on as like white trash poverty food. So it would be AMPM hamburgers,
great,
cup of noodles, and cans of Vienna sausage.
Amazing. Okay. AMPM hamburgers.
Cup of noodles.
Cup of noodles and canned Vienna sausages. Amazing. Amazing. Wonderful. All savory. All savory. Yes. Wonderful. Okay.
Well, I just eat the candy. I've never given that up.
Yeah, there you go. That's a good rule to live by. Okay, so next category, let's do three places in the world that you would like to have a vacation home if getting there were no problem.
New York City.
Great.
London.
Great.
And... I feel like pressure to add a beach, but
do
honestly,
not
I'm
feel
just
pressure.
Not a beach person.
I'm not either.
I like it gloomy and concrete. What can I say?
Love it. I'm on board.
Well, I'll say Seattle. I haven't been back home for many, many years, so I'll say Seattle.
Perfect.
Speaking of gloomy and concrete.
Yeah, you know, listen, there's some trees. There's plenty of beautiful trees. Yes, and some water. So good on you. Okay, listen, all due respect to your marvelous husband.
Yeah.
Three real life characters, book characters, movie characters, doesn't matter to me, any age, any era, that you're going to have romantic, sexy times with in this alternate universe.
Ooh. Okay, Sidney Carton. He was my first true love from Charles Dickens' Tale of Two Cities. I was very much a nerd.
Adorable.
Still am. Proudly nerd.
Own it.
Let's see. Who else? Ruby Rose.
Right.
And the person I'm very obsessed with right now, who I find unbelievably sexy for reasons that I don't quite understand, because this, so I came out as queer when I was 35 because of the whole like sexual lobotomized thing. Mm. But I'm bi, so I'm still very comfortable within my marriage, but it's been a whole thing to unravel in my head. So it's still kind of a mystery to me at all. Why am I attracted to this person? It's because it's very much evolving. That's a thing that's occurring in my brain as we speak.
Oh, I'm so excited to hear about who this is with all that.
Her name is LP, the musician LP. Mm-hmm. It's like Laura Pagazzoli, something like that. Anyway, just the letters LP.
Okay.
And she's just, I don't know.
I got to look her up. I feel ashamed that I
saw her on YouTube. When her gender presentation is such that you don't know at first glance what's happening. And so that just kind of pulled me right in. And she is the most incredible vocalist, like unreal. So yeah, I've been obsessed with her ever since. And I'm still, the whole time I'm kind of like observing myself going like, really? Why? And I'm going, I don't know. It just works. I'm trying not to ask why and just go with the feelings.
Good
for
you. Good for you. I got to look her up post-haste. That's my number one goal. Listen, I don't have to set a goal. I can make that happen. That's not a thing that I have to like raise money for or train for in any way. I will make it happen. Wonderful. I'm going to look her up when I finish this. Okay. Next category. Let's do three things that you wish it were easy to make in a day, like three crafts. Ooh. That become a huge undertaking if you're really going to try to do them, but we're sort of creating this magical universe in which you can have it done in a day.
Hmm. Ooh, boy.
That's a special never before done category that I just thought of because of you and your loves.
Oh wow, it's kind of an existential question for me because, in my self-care life, we do a lot of creative self-care projects and we preach it's about the process. It's about the process. Like if you make something and you hate it, just throw it away. Who the fuck cares? Yeah. The point is that you made something. And so now I have to kind of reverse my thinking.
I know. It really, this is like impatient little kid game. I mean, it's basically sort of like unraveling. It's the journey stuff. I strip away. For this childish game.
Well, we get to in our fantasies, right? Yeah. I'm going to say cross stitch is one of them because I love cross stitch. And part of what I love cross stitch is because it's a great place to find flow.
Yeah.
If you're looking for that magical flow state.
Yes.
That like the repetitive movements of something like cross stitch will get you
so
there.
So much.
But also if you just want something pretty to hang on your wall, it takes for fucking ever. Yeah. So that... I would speed that up occasionally.
Yes, fair.
Let's see. Building. Whether it's like furniture or houses, just building takes forever.
Yes, indeed.
And I'm going to throw cooking in there because I consider that an art form and it does take too long.
Yeah.
I do not like chopping, but
you need your sous chef.
I do.
Understood. Yeah, I just painted the kitchen and all the cabinets of the kitchen, and it definitely was an exercise in like of the several days that it took me to complete, just the journey from the moment to moment of like just really getting into a flow, and because I do love labor like that, and that's probably a luxurious thing to say,
right?
Because I don't have to do it every day for a living, but the sort of going from that to the next feeling, which is just this sort of desperation of like, I cannot believe how long this is taking. Why did I start this project? Every face, like I have to paint the inside too. Oh, and then to like just being excited because it's just like, it's such a wonderful way to sort of freshen up, your nest and your life and your view and all that kind of stuff, like all these sort of like intense emotions that just are surrounding doing some painting. I really get it. Okay, final category. Let's do three. And this is another one where it's like, I think you and I both kind of embrace the mystery. So, I'm forcing you to think carefully yet quickly about three things that you'd be willing to have the mystery solved. But three mysteries, big or small, that one of which you will end up having the answer to in our alternate universe.
I would like to know definitively if there is a God that is capable of having a personal relationship.
Yep.
You know what I mean?
Yep.
Like, not a God that's like, you know, we're all God when we're one. Not, right. You know, right. Like no, I want to know if there is a heavenly father or heavenly mother.
Got
but,
it.
You know, yeah, I'd say that. And two more of those, right?
Yeah.
Let's see.
But it can also be like, whatever did happen to that bracelet my sister gave me that I forgot?
I would like to know all of the mysteries behind MK Ultra.
Oh, great.
And
okay.
Exactly the people who were hurt.
Yeah.
And
thank
and
you.
Exactly
on behalf
the...
of everyone who's curious about that, including
yes.
me, thank you. Thank you for putting that on your list.
Yes. I'm very, very curious about that. Because that, I mean, anyway, so I could just go down so many rabbit holes. I have to close the doors to the rabbit holes as I'm talking. Okay, one more. Let's see. MK Ultra, is there a God? I would like to know, let's see. I would like to know, I guess this feels separate to me than the God question, but I would like to know if the spirits that we feel are actually what we're feeling, or if that's just brain chemistry, you know?
Yeah.
I'd like to know if there is some actual form of communication happening there, or if it's just, you know, what we're manifesting because our subconscious is very complicated.
Yeah. Yeah. Agreed. See, that's that last one for some reason, even more so than the, is there a God one? I'm like afraid to know the answer in a sense,
right?
You know?
Right.
Cause I don't know if I, it's like, am I ready to ask that question? If there is a definitive answer, am I ready to know the answer? If it's not what I want, you know?
Yeah.
So that's very brave of you. It's very brave of you.
Well, you know, I'm that adventuring explorer, apparently.
Yeah, I appreciate it. I appreciate it. Okay, so first of all, let's do, I'm just going to do my little squiggle, so just tell me when to stop.
Okay. Stop.
Okay. And then while I do this, I would love, because you have so many different things to offer the world, I would love for you to take this opportunity to tell people where they can find you, tell them about Haven Tree, et cetera. And then I will come back with your 100% guaranteed fictitious MASH future.
I love this. Okay. Well, personally, you can follow me on all the social media places at Reese Dixon. I've got a blog at Reese Dixon and a YouTube channel at Reese Dixon. And the YouTube channel, the blog's kind of on hiatus, but the YouTube channel's coming back because we're about to start doing some music stuff on there. So that's very exciting.
Nice.
And then Haven Tree, all of our social media stuff is Haven Tree Box. And follow us there because I will be your naggy internet friend that tells you when it's okay for you to take a nap. And the answer is always.
Great.
And so we started this, it's a self-care box and company. So it's an online store as well. And we started it because my business partner and I we both have disabilities. We are both raising kids with special needs. And the concept of self-care is actually very radical and powerful if you don't let like Dove Beauty and Nike Sport take it away from us, you know? So we are a B Corp. We are a science and effectiveness based. And we talk about stuff like drinking water and how to take your meds and gear that will help you with actual stuff. We talk about flow. We talk about gratitude, like the stuff that is actually studied and effective. You know, one of our catchphrases is self-care that goes deeper than bath bombs.
Oh, nice.
You know, bath bombs are fine, but they're not going to save your life.
Right.
Okay.
Right,
and
right.
The self-care is about building a life that you don't have to escape from. So it's far more foundational than that. And that's what we're about. So
fantastic.
Yeah, come check us out.
I have some results that I would be very thrilled to share with you.
Oh, boy. I can't wait.
I feel very good about the outcome of all of this. Not the least of which, in terms of things I'm excited about, is this idea of you like cooking rapid fire. So you have this magical ability to cook wonderfully and quickly in your ABBA-inspired sparkly jumpsuit.
Yes!
That's a very, very satisfying image to me.
Oh,
I don't know if you're doing this at your house in Seattle. But that is certainly where you ended up with a vacation home. Now listen, before your prepared meal has been completed, clearly you're dancing around wearing this jumpsuit and doing all this cooking. You're going to need some snacks. I want you to rest assured nothing bad can come of you eating unlimited amounts of canned Vienna sausages.
Gross.
Pop another one in. You're good to go.
Oh, that like gelatinous stuff. Oh, yeah.
I can't believe you picked something that then grossed yourself out. Amazing.
Well, that's poor white trash food
good
for
work.
You.
Good work, everybody. You have the ability, as well as, you know, having your wonderful vacation home in Seattle, you also have the ability to jump into and interact with the characters in I Capture the Castle.
Oh, fun.
And you can share your adventures when you come home with either your dear, dear friend, Ms. Gilda Radner, or your sexy times partner, LP.
Uh-oh. What?
Someone got LP.
Yes.
You'll have all the time in the world to investigate your attraction. So well done you on that. Which just leaves us with the fact that, listen, you're going to get your answer. What are these spirits that we feel? What is this communication that we feel like we're having? What is the influence when we feel that someone is near, or that we feel we're connecting on some level with something unseen, or someone unseen? What's that all about? What's the answer? You're going to get that answer.
Oh man, that's such a, I think that's probably the one I'd really pick.
Yeah. Good.
I mean, I guess I'm just a person that, like, I don't like a comforting fiction. I just want to know.
I appreciate
like,
that.
Give it to me straight, yeah. And then I can deal, yeah. You know.
Well, we talked about that. Yeah, the idea of whatever was going on in your mind that kind of provided you that comfort, whether it was from the outside or the inside, that they're both kind of miraculous, you know, in their way.
Exactly.
Wonderful.
Either it's the divinity without or it's the divinity
Absolutely.
Within. I don't really care.
Well, thank God we almost talked for another hour. Teresa, thank you so much.
Oh,
it's been such a long time coming. It doesn't surprise me at all that we have had so much and so much more that we could and hopefully will talk about in some other way. Thank you so much for doing the podcast. And everybody else, I hope you enjoyed this two-parter, this unprecedented two-parter.
Honored.
And
I am deeply honored.
It's my pleasure. We'll talk to you next time on the podcast. The show is recorded by me and edited by Julian Burrell. And as always, the JV Club theme song is Back Before We Were Brittle by the amazing Say Hi.
MaximumFun.org.
Comedy and culture.
Artist owned.
Audience supported.